Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, and also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And also visit our different pages there, as well as our page there to different charity organizations. We've got some great folks there that, of course, will greatly appreciate your help. Of course, with the upcoming holiday seasons, I think it makes a great gift of giving for those and teach the children some good lessons on giving. Tonight, we will be talking about, is Obamacare becoming dangerous for the Democrat Party? And, of course, callers and chat participation are welcome. So share the link to the show tonight, please, and join us and listen and talk with me, the host, or our panelists, which include the founder of Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment, James Neighbors, conservative activist Kelly Mordecai. And, of course, you can talk with the other guests we may have on the show, as well as audience members. And for those who frequent the show, they know that all mics do stay open throughout the show. And tonight we will discuss the possibilities of Obamacare becoming a noose around the neck of the Democratic Party, especially for those up for election in 2014. And I will begin by putting in an article that we have here. It's really short, and it's from, let me scroll up here, Newsbusters, and it says, can anyone imagine a top Bush 33 advisor, let's say Karl Rove, which I'm not a Karl Rove fan by any stretch of the imagination, folks, as you know, telling a reporter that his boss couldn't attend an important American historical anniversary event because he's too busy trying to save the Republican Party. Now, of course, we are talking about Obama not in Gettysburg to celebrate the Gettysburg Address. Dan Pfeiffer, the assistant to the President of the United States and senior advisor to the President for Strategy and Communications, in a response to a tough but fair question tweeted by Ron Fornier at the National Journal, Pfeiffer said that President Barack Obama wasn't attending the ceremonies surrounding the 150th anniversary of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address because there's this whole website thing that someone suggested might destroy the Democrat Party. The exchange would surely generate a great deal of press coverage if it involved a conservative, and we all know that's true, or a Republican president advisor. But the only story other than at Fournier's National Journal was at the Hill, a popular burial ground for such stories. So we will start with that article tonight. And first we will let in Mr. James Neighbor, as we know is the founder for the Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment. Welcome to the show, and thank you very much for coming in. How are you, James?
No, I'm doing great, Robert. How are you doing tonight?
Good, really good. It's great to be back. I know I wasn't here last week. I took a small hiatus. I went out of town for a two-day vacation, and it's great to be back.
Well, I'll be on a bit of a vacation myself, if you want to call it that. About 9:30 in the morning, I get the joyous pleasure of having spinal fusion surgery on my neck done. So that'll be a vacation of sorts, but I'm not sure I'd call it that.
Right, and of course we wish you the best of luck, James, and speedy recovery to that surgery tomorrow. And you know, please keep us posted. Everyone out there listening, either live or who listen here now on the archives, please keep James in your thoughts and those of you in your prayers as well. So what's your thoughts? We've been here, and I've got a couple more articles, and hopefully I can get some of these sound clips together for some of the discussion that we're starting to hear about Democrats are starting, you know, some Democrats, especially those who are up for election in 2014, are getting kind of nervous about how Obamacare is going to affect their election or re-election. What do you think on that?
Well, it's actually something that I've rather counted on. You know, while we've been out protesting and rallying and whatnot with overpasses, is the Democrats seeing that basically being seen as collaborating with Obama as being poison to their reelection chances. I mean, you know, cyanide, absolute death to their reelection campaign. And, you know, really, the farther away they fall from there, the better it is for America, the more nullified, even if he's not removed from office, the more Democrats that distance themselves from President Obama, the more his entire agenda is nullified. And well, that can't be a bad thing for America, even if the entire Congress for the next 2.5 years is completely, you know, null and void as far as getting anything done. It won't be bad for America.
Well, yeah, certainly. And we also have our other panelists on here. And this is Cindy Todd. I want to bring you on as well, Cindy. Thank you very much for coming into the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. I just want to say, folks, that while on my little vacation, I got the honor of finally being able to meet Cindy Todd here. A wonderful experience to finally be able to meet you and see you face-to-face, Cindy. It was definitely a pleasure, and hopefully we'll be able to do that again in the not-too-distant future.
Well, I hope so, too, and it was a pleasure to meet you and your wife. You're two very sweet young people, and I had a good time conversing with you. And I also
awesome. Well, I appreciate
wait for my
that.
Other
Thank
meeting.
You.
I totally lost track of the time. You know, I was late to that meeting I was supposed to go to.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we ended up getting back into town about, I'd say 6:30 in the morning the next day.
Oh, wow. I know you must have been so tired, Robert, is all I've got to say.
Oh,
I don't know.
I worked that day
ever...
and a benefit to go to that night.
Oh, boy. Oh, well. Yeah, I'm with James on that last comment. If we can just keep the Democrats so afraid of losing their place that that they don't let Obama get his way. See, the thing is, there's some Democrats in Congress that aren't a part of that globalist, elitist crew. They're freshman Democrats, and this all of a sudden they get smacked with this, oh, I thought we were just liberal. And then they come to find out, you know, they're trying to do things totally different from what a liberal usually wants to do. So I think they're waking up a little bit and they're saying, okay, maybe this is a little more than I bargained for when I joined the Democrat Party or when I ran for Congress and thought that I was going to do something for my people back home. So, you know, maybe they're thinking twice. We are seeing that maybe they like their jobs more than they like Obama's agenda. And maybe they're starting to see some of the local hurt, the local pain from their constituents, because these guys, they're just, well, some of them are just flat out hiding from their constituents. And then others, you know, when they have their little town halls or they're sitting in their office back home, people are coming in and pounding on their desk, you know. They're not used to that. They're used to a constant mutual congratulatory society. In the Democrat Party, you just can't do anything wrong. I mean, you can go to prison. You can still get your job back. You can embezzle. You can still get your job back. You can lie and still get your job back. You can have sex with a prostitute, and you can still get your job back. You can have whatever in your office with whoever, and it just doesn't matter to the Democrats. All they care about is that liberal agenda, getting that check, and I think they're finding out that getting that check out to their people is going to be a little harder than it used to be, because eventually America is going to go bankrupt and there will be no more money. And guess who the party of retribution is going to be? You know, they're the ones that are going to receive all the backlash from the plans that Obama has for us. So they're starting to think, you know, okay, is this going to be my legacy? I was of the party that brought down the greatest nation that ever was on the earth. I don't know. You think they're thinking that, James?
Well, I think without a doubt, if they aren't giving it serious thought, they're at least entertaining it right now. I mean, when you look at the reputation that the United States is getting across the world, I mean, my gosh, we're apologizing to the Afghani people for going over there and giving them democracy. Hello. I mean, if anything, they should be apologizing to us for all the soldiers that have been killed by their police officers that turned out to be Taliban. And you know, this is all just a part of Obama's weakening of America, and they see that. You know, the deficit being jacked up as high as it is. Like, what are we up to, 18 trillion now, or have they stopped counting? I believe that as this year continues, and especially once we get into the election campaign, you're going to see more and more Democrats saying, I wish I had never listened to Nancy Pelosi. I think she's going to be vilified by her peers in the Democrat Party by the time November rolls around, because they're going to say, you know, we trusted her when she told us not to read it. We thought that she was looking out for our best interest, and I made a mistake and I didn't read it and I voted for it anyway. And that was one of the biggest mistakes of my career. I mean, hopefully there's none of them listening right now, so they won't take any pointers from me. but I really think that's the only thing that will save them come the elections in 2014, aside from rampant voter fraud. I think what we're about to see is the shunning of the liberal agenda, like what happened after Reagan was in office for a couple of years. You know, he to be called a liberal Democrat when the economy started kicking in, you know, when Reagan was in office, to be called a liberal tax and spend Democrat was a death knell to your reelection chances. And I think we're about to see that again. I think we're about to see a very strong resurgence. I think we may, and this might be just a pie in the sky wish, but I think we may actually see a return of the conservative right Democrat.
Wow. Well, that would be great. You know, I, with all this Kennedy business that's been going on TV, I was reminded that the Democrat Party was actually a very moderate party back in the 60s. I would do to have President Kennedy back. I mean, that guy was tougher than any, just about as tough as any Republican we've ever had since, definitely since Reagan. I guess Reagan was like in the middle of a whole lot of wimpy Republicans, but he was tough, and his brother was tough, and they both died for it. Makes me think, if we'd have got a tough guy in the White House, you know, would he still be living right now? You know, I worry about that, because if you look back, I remember when Barbara Haney did a little history on the assassinated presidents. They're all people who did absolutely amazing things. They made reforms and changes that were monumental, and they paid for it with their lives. So, you know, I'm like, well, do we want to put Newt in the White House, make him a target, you know, or do we want to put somebody like Ted Cruz in there and then make him a target? Gosh, and I'm, you know, I'm not even sure if Ted Cruz is eligible anyway, but, you know, somebody like him. So, yeah, the Democrat Party was once a party you could be proud of. Even if you were a Republican, you could be proud of your president. So anymore.
Well, I've got a, excuse me. I have an article here that from CNN Politics. It says White House officials get earful from Democrats on Obamacare. And this was an article today, actually just updated about 8:45 this evening, Eastern Time. This is a private meeting on Capitol Hill with White House Democrats and White House officials on Wednesday became heated when rank-and-file members expressed frustration about continued Obamacare problems, according to multiple sources in the room. One congressional Democrat who attended the meeting said senior Obama administration officials, Mike Hash and David Simmons, really got hit by House Democrats about everything from the troubled website to the broken presidential promise that people could keep their insurance plans they like. You know, the $15 million that people are talking about, and I'll digress a little bit and say, you know, remember when there was the government shutdown and they're talking about the 800,000 who would be affected, and they're making such a huge deal on that. But now the, you know, 10 million plus people are going to be losing their health care. Oh, well, that's just only a small portion of the people. But anyway, I'll get back to the article here. It says, the most pressing political challenge for White House Democrats will come this Friday when they have to vote on House Republican plan by Republican Fred Upton of Michigan that allows people to keep their policies if they want to. And I suggest, folks, and this is, you know, off the article, we'll get back to it, is that if you're in a state, with this vote coming up on Friday, even if you're in a state who your representatives are Democrats, it probably would be a very good idea to contact them as well, because they're going to start feeling the heat, and they are, you know, according to this article, already are, to get ahead, you know, talk to them about getting rid of this, you know, Obamacare, wiping it out, because it's only going to hurt their chances in 2014, not just with independents, but it sounds like with perhaps some Democrats as well. So, folks, they get a hold of your senators and congressmen and women and, you know, tell them, you know, what to do with Obamacare. But then back to the article. Insurance companies have begun canceling certain individual plans, mainly due to Obamacare, creating an unexpected hardship for many who could soon find themselves without coverage or wind up facing higher costs for new plans they may not want. And I do have another article we may go to later where it talks about the Obamacare poster girl who I guess was really put in the spotlight about how she was going to benefit from Obamacare, and that was single mother Jessica Sanford. She's 48 from Washington. We got another article that says that Obamacare is not really working out for her as well, and we'll get to that later on in the evening. It says, in California alone, more than 1 million people have received policy termination notices from several insurers because their plans do not meet the minimum requirements under the Affordable Care Act, the state's insurance commissioner said this week. Insurers have, in a large number of cases, temporarily extended the time frame for ending those agreements. Several lawmakers, even liberals who adamantly support Obamacare, stood and warned the officials that White House must come up with a solution before the vote. I just reiterate, folks, it's very important whether you're hearing this tonight live or listening to the archives before Friday to contact your senators and Congress people to tell them about the vote. It says, as CNN first reporter on Tuesday, many House Democrats are feeling so much pressure from constituents on this issue that they may feel compelled to vote yes for political reasons. Members want to keep their promises to their constituents, that is, they would have affordable insurance. If they want to keep the plan they have, they would keep it, said Representative Marcy Kepter, a Democrat of Ohio. We would offer broader insurance alternatives so that people would have more competitive pricing. Democratic congressional sources have told CNN that Friday is the de facto deadline for the administration to come up with a fix. The preference would be an administrative remedy that circumvents the polarized Congress, but if that is not possible, Democrats are demanding the White House offer legislative solutions, which is interesting that the Congress is going to tell the White House to offer legislative solutions when isn't that their job, James, Cindy?
Well, I would have to say that what they're doing is forcing Obama to pull a Harry Truman. The buck stops here. You're the one that wanted the law. You're the one that helped get it drafted, you and Nancy Pelosi. You'd better come up with a law that we can pass, or we're going to dump it all on you. I think that's a polite ultimatum offered to the president that he can do his job or else.
What do you think, Cindy?
I agree. And I think that, you know, some of these people that blog and some of these people that I get emails from, they will soon be giving us lists of vulnerable Democrats. And at that point, when we start getting those lists, we need to be on the phone and on the email, and we need to inundate their desks with pleas of, come on, buddy, think of us out here, all right? Try to put us before your job these days. You know. Try to actually by putting us first, they're going to help their job. But you know, put us above your party. You know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, think of us rather than your party. Anyway, so James, I don't know. Have you seen any list like that? Because I know Bill Marshall comes out with a lot of stuff. Americans for Prosperity might come up with it.
I did actually see a list, and I'm not at my computer right now, so I wouldn't be able to go digging for it. Okay.
So vulnerable Democratic seats, and these are Senate seats up for re-election in 2014. Alaska. So for those of you in Alaska,
wait. I'm gonna write them all in the chat so I can look at them in a minute. Hang on.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
say that now.
Alaska, Mark Begich, B-E-G-I-C-H.
Mark B-E-C.
G-I-C-H.
G-I-C-H. That's a weird...
Yeah, he provided the 60th vote for Obamacare.
Okay, well then, we'll see if he still feels that way. Okay, and who else?
And then there's Arkansas, Mark Pryor.
Yeah, we don't need to work with that one. He just needs to go. I've got friends in Arkansas, and that guy's got serious issues.
So he wouldn't even be...
Oh, definitely targeted. Definitely targeted. Oh. Don't get me wrong. No, he's got to go. We need to, don't even try to negotiate with that one. He needs to be targeted and removed.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
And there's also Blanche Lincoln.
Where is she from?
This is Arkansas.
Oh, also Arkansas. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then we have for Colorado, Mark Udall, U-D-A-L-L.
Okay.
Iowa's Tom Harkin.
Let's see. Iowa.
Now he decided not to seek reelection, so we don't know who... the person would be for Iowa, but that seat, with the Senate seats, could be up for grabs.
Okay,
and then there's Louisiana.
Okay.
And she voted for Obamacare as well, and that's Mary Landrieu, L-A-N-D. R-I-E-U.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the blue state of Michigan. And that is Carl Levin. And he's retiring. He's retiring in 2014, so maybe a newcomer for Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Mary has put in the chat, not Landrieu. Can you give us an idea of why you said that, Mary? Okay, who's next?
Okay. And welcome, Mary. Welcome to the welcome to the chat, Mary. It's good to see you. And let's see. Let me go back to the list
no.
I have here. And then there's.
Say, look, I'm Mary, but I'm not Mary Landrieu. She doesn't want to get. Okay.
And Mr. Al Franken from Minnesota.
Al.
Oh, now there's a troll that's got to go.
What's that?
Al Franken.
Oh, my
God. That guy's terrible.
Franken. Oh, my gosh. Well, he won't even listen to anybody anyway. You could talk to your blue in the face, and Franken's not going to agree to anything. Oh, my gosh. That guy is, he's on a high of himself. He's high on himself.
Well, he's high, all right. I don't know what he's taking, but I'd like to know so I don't ever take it.
Yeah, really. I think it's probably too late for him to quit. I think the damage is done.
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else there?
Okay, oh, yeah, the list, New Hampshire.
Okay. Huh?
She is, looks like she will not be running again. And so far, it looks like that could be up in the air for the Republicans to win it.
Who
and then
that?
There's North Carolina. Kay Hagan. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh. No, what was her name? The New Hampshire one.
New Hampshire, Jeanne Shaheen.
Spell that.
It's S-H-A-H-E-E-N.
S-H. Oh, Sheehan.
Sheehan, yeah.
Okay. All right. You know, you've mentioned a couple that are not going to be running. I hope that we can take those seats when they give up their seats. I hope we can take them with a decent Republican, not somebody like you know who, but a decent Republican.
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as Republicans running, I wish we could get a list of those that Karl Rove is backing and then back a different one.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, let's find out who Karl Rove and Bernie are backing, and we'll see if we can get somebody against them to get going, some traction. Okay, then you said
we've got to do something.
All right, North Carolina, Kay Hagan.
I'm sorry?
I said you said North Carolina, Kay Hagan, right?
Let me go back there. It says North Carolina, Kay Hagan.
Yep. Okay, who's after that?
Let's see. And South Dakota, Tim Johnson.
Tim?
Tim, T-I-M.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tim Johnson. And last here on the list I've got is West Virginia's Jay Rockefeller has decided not to run for re-election.
Rockefeller?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is no longer running, so, I mean, that might be not someone to call because they're not going to care unless they, you know, well, it depends what kind of legacy, but they want to leave for the next candidate, you know, that's going to be running against them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we got some good possibilities. I'm going to put this out here. Okay, I got all the people that you mentioned in the chat right now. If anybody wants to cut and paste it somewhere else where they won't forget it, I'm going to post it on my Facebook page.
Yeah, Mary points out it's very important, folks, for to get a veto-proof Senate. And also remember this. It doesn't necessarily have to be, in my opinion, just frankly, only a Republican veto-proof Senate, but also one that is conservative.
Yes. Yes, just getting a Republican is not I mean, we found that out. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Just getting a Republican isn't going to cut it anymore.
Right.
Can you hear me? When I talk with my phone on my chin like that, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Now,
okay.
That's one thing that I've been saying, you know, with overpasses now for a few months, is that come 2014, we're going on a demo commie hunt and rhino hunt. No more rhinos, no more liberal communists, none of them. They all have to go because they're all working on the same, they're all being paid by the same corporate masters. They've got to go. You know, they're destroying our country.
Yep. and as the country is slowly waking up, we may be able to get some in. The thing is, we kind of almost, we may have done a bad thing. We should have let this healthcare thing just go on through. And the thing is, that's probably why they built the website, so that it wouldn't pull in too many people all at once, because it would have been, talk about sticker shock for about 15 million people. If they had all tried to get on, that would have been the end of the Democrats in the Senate. And once they have the program in place and they have annihilated all the insurance companies and annihilated all the old ways of doing business, then you're like Canada and you can't go back. You're like England. You can't go back. You're like France. You can't go back. It's too late.
I don't know. I would disagree with that. We have a very resilient economy here in the United States. I mean, we survived Carter.
Now that we have Obama, what do you think of Carter, though?
those miles-long gas lines pretty well, I remember as a kid baking in the car in the middle of summer, wondering why we've got to sit here waiting for gas, watching people throw down because one guy tried to cut somebody off. We had one set of problems with Carter, and we have another set of problems with Obama, but they both have one very big thing in common. They don't know foreign policy to save their life.
Mm-hmm.
And look how long it took before we got another super liberal in the president, in the White House after Carter. I mean, 1980 to 2008, 28 years. That's a generation in change as far as the way you count that. I think after the Obama debacle, as long as we stay vigilant, it may be two generations before we even have the specter of this coming, but we have got to stay vigilant to prevent this mess from returning to our politics because, how does that saying go? The price of freedom is eternal vigilance?
Yep.
And we can...
Go ahead. Well, do you think, though, that... because, like, already we've lost several small insurance companies, and a lot of smaller insurance companies have lost their underwriters so that they can no longer sell health insurance. And my friend who's in the insurance business who sets up policies for businesses, he sets up group policies for businesses. He told me that that's one thing that will happen right away, is that a lot of smaller insurance companies are going to go bust, and what you're going to end up with is a big two or a big three, and everybody will be getting their insurance from those big three. Now, those big three, of course, will probably be tied right to the government. If they're not now, they will be soon. And once that happens and you get down to 2016 and let's say we get a Republican in the White House in 2016, if he's a good Republican, we might have a chance to do something about this. But if we happen to get another rhino in there, if we get a rhino in there,
for a few minutes. I was just watching the other day Crossfire, so I was hoping to see Newt on there, but they had Tim Pawlenty on instead this past Monday, and they're talking about 2016 about a standoff, of course, as as the two candidates, Hillary Clinton, of course, on the one side, and on the Democrat side, of course, they're already talking about will she have to distance herself from Obama. But then they also had, they're still talking about Chris Christie as being the nominee for the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, see,
oh, my gosh, I read something that was almost as frightening as Chris Christie today, actually. They were, touting Paul Ryan as the new darling of the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah, I heard that too a little bit.
Yeah.
Or that being the ticket. Yeah, or the ticket being a Paul Ryan and a Chris Christie.
Yeah, well, they can forget it. I'm not voting for Mr. Amnesty, too.
No. No, you see, that's why. And the thing is that the problem is, once all these insurance companies go bust, how do you go back to a private insurance system with only two or three insurance companies still alive, and they're calling the shots, and they've got so much money that they're going to get anything they want. It's not going to be any real reforms.
Look at the Great Depression. All sorts of companies went under. All mm-hmm. sorts of companies went under. What you'll yeah. see are businesses getting together and creating new insurance companies. It could actually, if it's done right, could be bring along a whole new generation of insurance companies that, would it be a little choppy at first? Well, of course it would be a little choppy at first. You know, you'd have people that had never, you know, businesses and investors had never done it. Another thing that I could foresee would be a lot of these insurance companies that have gone under getting together, you know, the ones that were on their boards and getting attorneys and filing massive class action lawsuits against the government.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, let's face it, we are a very litigious society. That's what I would do if I were an insurance company that went under because of Obamacare and then it disappeared and we're still, you know, we've already disappeared. You could bet the bank that I would attempt to sue the federal government for driving my company under.
Well, now here's the thing, though. If you sue the government, where does the government get its money?
Well, we all know that. It won't stop them from trying.
How does that help us, though? I mean, they can sue to stop the program to kill Obamacare somehow. I don't know how that could be done because the Supreme Court's already ruled it was constitutional, so I'm not sure.
I just think they would end up just suing for damages if it's repealed for whatever reason. I could easily envision whatever insurance companies that were driven under by it suing the government for the damages caused to their companies. And, you know, would we be the ones that ended up paying for it? Well, you know, of course we would. Where does the government get their money from besides, you know, the printing presses?
Right.
They get it from us. What it would boil down to is it would be a taxpayer-funded insurance bailout is what it would be. Would it be a good thing? No. Last thing we really need is another bailout. But, I mean, I think the notion of lawsuits for damages for destroying their company, they pretty well could prove it. Yeah, they could pretty well prove that was what caused it.
That would be the problem.
I could see the federal government, I guess it would be the U.S. Attorney General's office, and Congress negotiating with these, you know, insurance companies that have filed the lawsuits, negotiating out of the lawsuit to bail them out.
Yeah. Well,
although it would be nice to see them sue Nancy Pelosi personally.
Yeah. Well, that would be great.
For those of you in the chat, if you'd like to chime in, I just want to take the time to put out the call-in number, and that is 347-945-7428. So if anyone would like to chime in on anything you've heard tonight, feel free. Mics do stay open. At 347-945-7428. Thank you very much, Cindy and James. I just want to get that out there for a minute because I haven't got a chance to do that yet. So go ahead.
Well, what we're dealing with, though, is really larger than even the healthcare system, and that is how they are killing our dollar. When a dollar gets devalued to the point that ours is now, it's really difficult to try to revive it and bring it back. Really, really difficult. I don't know if with those two huge things, with those two huge problems going on, I'm concerned about America because I see a looming disaster that will take many years to heal and to fix.
Well,
isn't that...
without a doubt, it's going to take a while for our economy to recover. What they're going to have to do is the same thing that Reagan did. We had rampant inflation in the double digits, which we do now, even if the White House isn't reporting into such. When you use the scale that every other president used prior to Obama, we would be sitting right now, I believe it was at about 12% inflation rate. And if you were to measure unemployment the same way that was done prior to Obama, we would be sitting on the verge of 15%, which, by the way, is only 5 points away from being a textbook depression. The only thing that's causing it to not tumble off into that is us spending mad amounts of money on welfare and keeping people with some sort of money. I mean, it would be one thing, I suppose, if it were a FDR type welfare where you actually had to work for it, but it's not. at least we could get something out of our money if it were an FDR type socialist program. But as it is, all you have to do is sit at the house. And but really, what we'll have to do is we're going to have to bite the bullet on a lot of programs, government programs, which needs to happen anyway, and just get rid of them. DHS would be my favorite one. We're going to get rid of a lot of unnecessary expenditures. We're going to have to lower taxes to the point to where we may even be, below that Reagan threshold where you're not losing revenue, but you're actually gaining revenue by business picking up. We may have to actually lower them below that threshold and have the government run and I hate to say it, in a bit more of a deficit to get the economy really really rolling. And then once it is, ease them back up to that threshold to where the revenue level, whatever that magic formula is that he figured out. I actually saw it one time. It was, I'm not a math genius, but they actually have a formula of negative and positive returns on tax revenue. But the thing is what we're going to have to do is cut businesses loose. We're going to have to reduce regulations for small and medium-sized businesses. We're going to have to eliminate tax breaks for big corporations and get the economy rolling again. Once we do that, all the rest of everything will fall into place. Just like
Newt
did when Reagan was in office.
Newt Gingrich pegged it when he ran on the gas. Because when you start pumping the oil we've got and pulling out the natural gas we've got and start working on all the different kinds of energy that we have available to us that the environmentalist wackos have stopped us from using, you could just like almost immediately turn your economy around with the kind of revenues that would be coming into the government and into our economy. That would just be such a boon for us.
Oh yeah, I mean, one thing that they could do is, well, here's an idea: let's build that Keystone Pipeline so the Chinese aren't buying all the Canadian oil. And if you lower fuel prices in America, which they've already proven, at least with the numbers, they've at least shown with the numbers that would do. If you reduce fuel costs, you reduce shipping costs. If you reduce shipping costs, you reduce prices on everything in this country.
Mm-hmm.
If you reduce prices, people do what? They buy more. If people buy more, the economy starts kickstarting.
Yep.
Real quick, folks, and I want to get back to this discussion, but I just got a tweet from Arlen Williams, of course, is a contributor to the blog Gulag Bound at gulagbound.com. And I've got an article here that I think it's really important. I know one of the stations a lot of folks listen to for conservative news is Fox News Channel. And one of those folks that people watch is Bill O'Reilly. And I've got an article here, and then I do have an audio that I'm going to play that I just got. So hopefully it's, you know, the quality is good because I'm going to put it together. But I do want folks to hear this because I think it's something too important because a lot of people look to these folks for, you know, the conservative side of things. But this is actually from today, and the article on gulagbound.com says, tonight Bill O'Reilly labeled as kooks those of us who are honest and responsible scrutinizers of who should or should not be our commander-in-chief. He nearly called us racists to boot. Never mind the readily apparent fraudulence of Barack Obama's purported birth certificate and draft registration. Never mind the lifelong co-commitments with communists. Never mind the lifelong affinity for Islam and Islamists. He has been effectively indicted in the Egypt for conspiracy for his administration's murderous work with Morsi and Muslim Brotherhood, anti-Christian, anti-Israeli, and anti-Egyptian sovereignty. Never mind the historical interjection of John Jay into the Constitution's requirements for commander-in-chief that he be not merely a citizen nor a native citizen but a natural-born citizen. Never mind so many other critically important facts that we all relate with each other in which the O'Reilly factor and Fox News either squelch or censor out altogether. It seems that watching the O'Reilly factor is a sign that one is neglecting something much more worthwhile. I wonder if the man's ghostwriter is chagrined at the fellow who purports to simply want to get the facts out to the folks. The video of his chat with the neo-Marxist Harvard professor Charles Ogletree follows the Oprah Winfrey vignette below. He says way below. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play this audio. It is a little bit not real lengthy. It's only about 9 minutes. But I think it's going to be something that the folks will be interested in hearing. And I think it's very important, especially since a lot of folks do look to Fox News. And give me a few moments to get this this up, and we'll get the audio.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Oprah Winfrey defending President Obama using the race card. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Last week, Ms. Winfrey, promoting her film The Butler in Great Britain, was interviewed by the BBC.
Has it ever crossed your mind that some of the treatment that Obama and the challenges he's faced and some of the reporting he's received is because he's an African-American?
Has it ever crossed my mind? It's crossed my mind probably as many times as it's crossed your mind. Probably it's crossed my mind more times than it's crossed your mind. It's just a level of disrespect. When the senator yelled out, "You're a liar," remember that? Yeah, I think that there's a level of disrespect for the office that occurs. And that occurs in some cases and maybe even many cases because he's African American.
Now let's analyze Oprah's take. I've known her for decades, not well, but we've spoken on occasion. As I've written, I admire Oprah Winfrey. She rose up from very humble circumstances to become perhaps the most powerful woman in the world. And she did that. She did that on pure talent. She also looks out for the kids. I've been on a program talking about protecting children. In my opinion, she is a good person. Oprah definitely has a blind spot when it comes to politics. She, along with some others, used a racial prism when analyzing public policy. There's no question that President Bush was attacked far more viciously than President Obama has been. But Ms. Winfrey has not acknowledged that, as far as I know. Both men had controversies, Bush, the Iraq War, Obama, health care. So, is there an anti-WASP sentiment in America? President Bush being a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I would like to put that question to Oprah Winfrey, but she has declined to appear on this program. Her statement is even more erroneous when you examine recent history. This week, we are marking the 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination. He was hated and vilified by some because he was a Roman Catholic. Again, the irrational hatred directed toward Kennedy far greater than what Barack Obama has experienced. So what Oprah Winfrey is doing is making an excuse for President Obama using race. And many other committed left-wing people who truly revere the president are doing the same thing. But we all know that some Americans do despise Barack Obama because of his skin color. There will always be bigots. But the number is insignificant. And I submit that Oprah Winfrey and others who play the race card can't back up their statements with any facts. The lunatic fringe will hate no matter what. But legitimate criticism of Barack Obama is not race-centric. It is based on policy. The president wants to change America. He wants to impose a big government income redistribution situation. Many Americans like me believe that will weaken the country. I have nothing personal against President Obama. In fact, he has joined with me to help thousands of wounded veterans. He's been great on that issue. But this nanny state play is causing tremendous economic problems, and that's where my criticism comes down. Finally, it is irresponsible of Oprah Winfrey, a woman of influence in this country, to say what she said to the BBC. The record shows that Mr. Obama is simply a president who is being criticized for some of his policies. And as the man himself would say, period. And that's a memo. Now the top story and my reaction. Joining us from Cambridge, Massachusetts, Harvard University Law Professor Charles Ogletree, who is a friend to the president. So where am I going wrong here, Professor?
Well, Bill, where shall I start? First of all, I love Oprah Winfrey. She's done a great job. And I think in her heart, if you heard all of her statement, I'm sure all of it we put on the Fox network, she's talking about how things are much better than they were. But she was incensed about what happened to President Obama with comments about race. She didn't say anything the president said. In fact, he is one who has Teflon when it comes to issues of attacking him. He's been attacked by people from start to finish. And I think the reality is that he is a good man. He doesn't let race bother him. Whether people say he's not race enough, he's too much race, he ignores that and tries to do what's best for the country. And you think about it, some of these criticisms have not just been about Obamacare, and people are very critical of that. But the reality has been about everything, about whether he's a citizen, whether he was born in Hawaii, whether he's really should be someone who's a Kenyan who shouldn't be in the office. Those types of attacks keep going on, and the U-lie is a very serious indictment. The whole idea that Joe Wilson did during the State of the Union, which never happens to any president, that was a very terrible event because it showed you after Joe Wilson said this, what happened? His contributions increased. Right? People agreed with him. That's crazy.
Well, look, here's the deal. You say that the president basically is under fire in some precincts because of his race. I reject that. I think it's basically a policy play. It's a policy play. That's why.
Right.
And you say that the Hawaii, Kenya, and you left out Muslim, you could throw that in there. Those people have been marginalized. They've been marginalized by me and others.
Bill, they still exist.
So bigots always exist, Professor. You know that. You can't do away with it. But let me be more pointed to you and Oprah Winfrey. Do you deny that President Bush the Younger was more vilified than President Obama?
I do. I
you don't think that they, did you hear did what the left was saying?
Let me just tell you. I do think more has been thrown at President Obama, and it hasn't stuck. He's the Teflon man. He's no question about that. He's able to do that. But he has been taking these attacks since he was a state senator from Illinois, when he was a U.S. senator in Illinois, when he was elected in 2008, when he ran against one of the great men who serves in Congress now, John McCain. He was elected again in 2012 when he ran against our governor, our former governor, Mitt Romney. And he has always been and will always be, as long as he lives. Just think about this 2012, less than a year ago, just before he was reelected, it was Donald Trump saying, if you give me your transcript from college, if you give me your birth certificate, I'll give you $5 million. You know, come on now.
Listen,
you've already
you can't control.
Why are you still doing that?
You can't control individuals from doing what they do. But Ms. Winfrey is indicting this country in Great Britain for being a racist country which objects to President Obama because of his skin color. Flat out false, not true, and you just made the point. He was elected twice. Black Americans comprise 13% of the population. Okay? So just the facts. Is there one legitimate news organization in this country, anywhere, Professor, that has used race to attack Barack Obama? One. Is there
a lot of them?
Give me one.
A lot of them. If you look at what has happened to President Obama from the first time he ran for office, there were ads in all of these papers about whether he was a Muslim.
Give me one news organization, one that has used race to vilify the president. You can't. You can't give me any. You're pointing to kooks. You're pointing to individual kooks.
You call Breitbart a kook and what he had to say before he passed away?
He was a blogger. He was a blogger. He worked for himself.
That goes to more people than anything else.
There is not an institutional bias against the president. You know there isn't. Kennedy, Roman Catholics, okay? You know what happened to him. All presidents get it. It is not a skin color deal. I'll give you the last word.
Just this, Bill. I think that if people look at history and look at what happened to President Obama, he's overcome the issue of claims of race. He's done a very good job on that. And I think that as much as you can criticize Oprah Winfrey, he has, in a sense, fluffed off all of these attacks on him. And his focus is on the economy, on making America go back to work, on trying to make sure we have a comprehensive health care plan, and all of those things are important. I love this man. He's doing a great job, and he's going to do a great job as an ambassador to the world once his term ends in 2016.
All right. Good debate, Professor. We really appreciate you taking time to come on tonight.
And come to Harvard. Come to Harvard, Bill.
I think you're ashamed of me up there now. I'm embarrassed, Mr. Beck. All right.
All right, and there you have it, folks. And at this time, I will be opening up the mic to Mr. Arlen Williams of Gulag Bound. Thank you very much, Arlen, for coming into the show. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Bard. I am doing swimmingly. Trouble is, my snorkel's not long enough, and I can't get my head above water. How's it going tonight?
It's going really well. Thank you very much. Yeah, I've seen that post on Twitter.
Good.
And so I thought, you know, it'd be really good to have it on the show, especially with my thoughts on Fox News, especially during the past primary election, how they handled that. They still leave a kind of a sour taste in my mouth. Anyway, thank you very much for calling in, and what do you have? I have to add on that.
Well, what do you think it is with Fox? We don't know exactly. You know, some people credit the squelching of information and the censorship to the share of a News Corp that Saudi Prince Alawid has, one of the principal people that is behind allegedly the funding of Barack Obama in the first place, his family. And then there's the whole mix of information that we've gotten in trickles beginning right away in early 2009 from Doug Hagman and Judy McLeod about there being effectively a squelch, kind of a what is the omerta? That's the mafia word for it. A code of omerta in the entire media regarding Barack Obama's eligibility and some of his deep background, the most peculiar and troubling things about it, including his frauds, not only the birth certificate, but the fact that of his natural born citizen status, even if he were born in the country, also his selective service very apparent fraud there. Debbie Schuster put that information out way back early in 2009. And then Zulo, the main investigator with the Surprise Arizona Sheriff's Posse, the cold case posse, has said the exact same thing, that he's heard from people in the media that there's been, from the top down, orders put on the media to knuckle under. And, you know, if that comes from the top down, what is the top? Is it the executives? I don't think it's just the union that they belong to, although that could be a part of it too. Or is it coming from worse and sinister, more sinister places? Could it be from financiers? Could it be from United States intelligence? There's a problem there, and we don't know what it is. You know, Stanley Ann Dunham worked for Timothy Geithner's father at the Ford Foundation when she was doing microloans. And that was going from nation to nation in the Southeast Asia area and some of the islands there. And a lot of people speculate she was used by the Soviets in doing so. And a lot of people speculate that she was used by the CIA. And it turns out research is kind of just demonstrated and true and in multiple ways that the Ford Foundation was very heavily involved with communist subversives, and at the same time, at the very same time, very heavily involved with the CIA. So it causes one's head to itch. Doesn't it?
Well, that's definitely a lot there. And we've got our panel here tonight, two of our three members we normally have on the show, and that's James Neighbor and Cindy Todd. So we'll go to James and then Cindy, and what do you guys think with what you heard in the article and on the video and what Arlen, you know, just shared with us now? What do you think, James?
Well, I think that that person from Harvard needs to wake up to reality. He really has no business educating people. The fact that and Oprah, I mean, you're, come on. Let's be realistic. You know, the fact that I mean, her statements were in and of itself racist. You know, I mean, why didn't they? You know, if they're going to throw out the race card left and right all the time, what about the African American woman that was in a high speed chase and killed by the D.C. police that rammed the barricades of the White House? Isn't President Obama half white? Why wasn't she suddenly racist? It's really the double standard that has emerged in this country for racism is just—it's appalling. It's absolutely appalling. And to think that Obama is more vilified than what President Bush was is utterly preposterous.
I mean, they compare him to Hitler.
You know, I got to say, if you want to compare somebody to Hitler, you know, let's see. Hitler was a big fan of nationalized health care. I actually made a meme for this the other day. He was a big fan of nationalized health care. He disarmed the American people and was a big fan of abortion. And, well, what do we have with Obama? We have all three of those things. Or, you know, are we starting to see a pattern here? So, you know, if you want to compare apples with oranges, the person that would compare closest to Hitler would be Obama. And just anyone to say that any attacks on him are racist, honestly, the people I've run across and say that are racist. You know, it's his policies, you know, and I've said it 100 times at the least, and I'll say it again now. President Obama, when he is, you know, being identified as an African-American president, had an absolutely phenomenal opportunity to heal a lot of wounds in this country that have kind of scabbed over a little bit and they got ignored. But he had an opportunity to end a lot of that by being a good president, by being one that, you know, being a president that cared about all walks of life. But instead, he pops off with comments like Trayvon Martin could have been my son, and sends his U.S. Attorney General's office down to start protests in support of Trayvon Martin. So, you know, I'm not sure what's going on in the background there, but we've got...
Someone's doing some heavy typing. Yeah, James.
And, you know, what we've got here is we have a very racist president with very racist people in his administration with very racist people supporting him. You know, I was actually, you know, like I said, I was glad in the one aspect, the fact that he is identified as an African-American with the opportunity he had, and he squandered it. He squandered it. If anything, his racism has set back the entire, you know, he set back race relations in this country by at least two decades. Because he has created animosity that will probably take at least a generation to go away.
And Cindy, what do you think about him calling folks who question, you know, Obama's, you know, legitimacy as an American president as kooks, and to want to look into you know, his birth certificate and things of that nature? What do you think of Bill O'Reilly calling him kooks? Some people want to investigate that kooks.
I think they absolutely had that planned. I think that Obama was better as a candidate than Hillary Clinton because of that aspect. They knew that anything that he did, all the criticism would roll right off of him because it would be race baiting. It would be racist comments. As long as they had that to throw up in the face of the Republicans. Oh, you just don't like what he's doing because he's black. He could get anything done that way. Hillary would have been another story. People could have gently said, well, maybe a woman wasn't the best person to put in the place of the person who's going to control the military. Or, you know, maybe a woman wasn't the best. Maybe her heart is too big. You know, you can always give an excuse for a woman, you can make a good argument that, you know, I mean, look what they did to Sarah Palin. One little comment. Well, I read lots of magazines and newspapers. one little comment, and she was annihilated and labeled an idiot. She's been called an idiot by every left-winger out there. And the same thing could have happened to Hillary because people don't seem to have the same stigma doesn't go along with being a sexist as it does with being a racist. So they knew that Obama was the better person to put in there. The agenda was the same. The person behind Obama, the people, and the money behind Obama are the ones that are getting this agenda done. It's not Obama. But the reason it's getting done is because Obama's there, because nobody can criticize him, because then they get attacked for being a racist. So I think it was planned that way, they had a sure... Women vote is kind of iffy, because there's a lot of conservative women out there. It's not exactly, it was a split thing how to get enough women voters, you know, to grab all that, you know, Democrat vote. But when you take all the black people in this country and even the Republicans that voted for him, the Republican black people that voted for him, I mean, you got a straight down the ticket. I mean, what was it, 90%? Of black people.
It was higher than that. It was higher than that.
You weren't going to get 90% of the women. So I don't know. The Democrats would have gotten the women vote with or without Hillary. but they might have gotten a stronger black vote. But anyway, it didn't really matter. They were going to put in whoever they were going to put in. The fix was in. They were going to, the people with the money behind them, they're the ones that put our POTUS in. And I think that they did it so that everything he did, every bit of criticism would roll right off of him. It's racist. That comment's racist. And O'Reilly saying that, I mean, I'm glad that guy said, well, do you think that Breitbart was a lunatic? You know, I'm glad O'Reilly had to answer that, because we all know that Breitbart was a great American. He was a person who was a patriot, and he was looking for the truth. He was digging out every bit of truth he could find, and I think that's what got him killed. And O'Reilly just kind of skimmed over, yeah, he's a blogger. He's a blogger. He doesn't matter.
Right. He tried to marginalize him.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of bloggers out there, and they're doing a lot of good stuff out there. They're getting information out. Bloggers are very important. Those online newspapers are very important for us.
Well, one of those is, you know, we have here, Arlen, and we'll bring it back to you. Two things. One, if you want to comment on anything Cindy and James said, and then also, two, anything else you'd like to add, and I guess three is, you know, our topic tonight is, we lost Cindy, I guess. She'll be calling back in. And then our topic tonight is Obamacare becoming dangerous for the Democratic Party, especially for those who are running in 2014. If you could comment on that as well and tell us what you think about that, that would be great.
Mm. Well, I think it is. I think that they intended it to be a kind of sabotage to drive insurance companies out of business, to take away the last bit of sovereign individualism out of the insurance market where people could have their own plans so that most people – are one way or another subjected to government paternalism and the rest to corporate paternalism. But they didn't intend, I don't think, for this to be as bad. And it's not really the website. The problem, as the testimony has revealed, is the huge complexities of trying to coordinate all this data from all these various insurance companies and to turn it into an e-commerce system as if you were selling shoes, you know. It's
right.
A tough thing. And isn't that, you know, fascism at work? I guess Adolf was able to make the trains run on time, but I'm not sure that Adolf would have been able to pull this off any better than Barry getting this done. And it's just a wake-up call. You know, to the mind-numbed, hive-minded collectivist voters out there that vote for America's Nazis, the Democratic Party, as to whether they're waking up and understanding what America's about and what their own value of their own freedom is about. So I think it's an act of God, you might say, in that regard. Not that he didn't know it was coming, that we have an opportunity to see if a lot of Americans can do a reality check here. I don't know. I think it's going to get worse. You know, it's going to be, you know, if it's projected to be not just 4 million people thrown off their plans, but more like 40 million.
Oh, yeah.
When,
mm-hmm. And what if you think it's going to become
I don't know.
A dangerous
I don't know.
Do you think it's going to start to become a danger for the Democrat Party, especially for the candidates who are going to be running in 2014, and maybe even to
well,
point where they're going to have to run away from it?
And
yeah,
that's true. And they started to distance themselves in this meeting that they had, senators with Obama last week, and so a lot of them are putting the fig leaves on, and you know, being against the worst Obamacare after they were for it, but that's not going to work. I do watch O'Reilly a lot, not always, but a lot, to find out kind of what the controlled opposition side is doing. And Dennis Miller was interesting the last time I saw him on the program, and he was he didn't want to really complain too much about Obama and attack him about this because he's afraid. He's afraid that this is going to put that wild animals back into the corner. And, you know, we all have speculated for years now about what the culmination of this could mean. People are worried, not just the veterans that you see writing articles like Jerry Boykin, but the people that are active duty and the people in that are so well informed in Oath Keepers or not, in our police force. As the big taint comes down through the DHS of how they're supposed to behave and who's supposed to be targeted, we, patriots, as suspected terrorists. I mean, they're trying whatever they can try. It's kind of like they're pouring their little syrup into America and seeing what can come out and seep into the cracks and get the job done for them. But as long as they're doing that, if they're pressured, if they face the big fail, if it's coming back on their faces instead of succeeding in sabotaging America with their being able to blame the wicked capitalists, like Marxists always do and like fascists do as well, then what's going to happen? It is all the more reason to develop relationships in the neighborhood. And I wholeheartedly suggest the folks that I've become more involved with as time has gone on, and that's Watchmen of America, watchmenofamerica.com, that is out there trying to recruit people to be neighborhood watch people that can help people in emergencies and also help people that are fulfilling the requirements of the Second Amendment. You know, these fellows that drafted that, George Mason and James Madison and all those folks, they were very adamant about what the Second Amendment was about. And that was free militias, well-regulated, in order to fight the despotism that the Declaration of Independence warns us about. So I'm very keyed up on that. And I'm, of course, I've made progress with the Sovereignty Campaign, SOVCAM.org, where I'm trying to help to get America's taught and get Americans taught on the actual core principles of America, and that's popular sovereignty under God with state and national sovereignty to guard it for the sake of our natural rights and upholding natural law. And, you know, if you're an atheist or an agnostic, people tend to philosophically understand that under God means under ultimate principles, as Ayn Rand spelled out, but I'm a Christian. And so those are my two suggestions. Take the First Amendment and deal with it and apply it and all that means with freedom of speech. And we want to objectively rate candidates, beginning in the Senate, with how well they uphold our reason for being as an America. It's not just these fuzzy notions of liberty or prosperity or free enterprise or even constitutionalism. All that can be tainted. When it all comes down to it, it's about popular sovereignty and state and national sovereignty to guard it and the autonomy of the church, the autonomy of this local sheriff. All of that stems from that, too. And so that's what we do. We want to rate candidates very objectively on those principles with surveys and examination of their records, and starting with these Senate candidates, hopefully with the primary. And not to take up much more of your time, we've got a website. I've almost got the main funding page set up, and I'm hoping to have that in a matter of hours or not many days at all. So that's what I'm involved with as the real solution here is efforts like that. So it's not just the Tea Party, but we're feeding the Tea Party the right information and that we're in their neighborhoods, because if TSH's TF, if I didn't quite get that, if the you know what hits the fan, we're going to need to do a lot of coordinating in our neighborhoods. So I kind of took that into a tangent, but I think it's an important one.
Well, no, we really appreciate the input. And, of course, folks, check out gulagbound.com. check that out as well as the other websites that Erlen gave to us here on the show. And that's a good thing about, for those who are listening to this now in the archives, they can rewind and get those get those links as well. And then, of course, check out the overpasses for Obama's impeachment, which, of course, we have the founders the founder of that, here on tonight, James. And we'll bring the mic over to you if you'd like to make any comment on Arlen's comment. Oh, that was redundant. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we all really just need to get involved with our country, because what the Democrat Party was and what it has morphed into is, and it is to touch on what he said earlier, is it has become the party of tyranny. They want to control everything, every facet of our lives through regulations from what you can eat, from what you can drink, everything you can imagine, every facet of your life, they feel like they are smarter than the
right.
American people. And, you know, we simply have got to stand up. We've got to stop being complacent, and we've got to get out there and speak our minds about what's really going on. Because, you know, the thing is we all know that there's money brokers behind what's going on in D.C. right now. And if we don't get the people that are in D.C. more afraid of the American people than they are afraid of the money brokers, nothing will ever change. And I'm not talking about a violent revolution. You know, I'm not an advocate of that, not by any means. But the fact is, you know, we had Vietnam, you know, in Vietnam we had a war, we had the draft, and that was really the catalyst behind all the big protests going out there. But the Vietnam War was nowhere near the threat to American society that the liberal slash, you know, socialist slash communist slash fascist agenda is to America. And
right.
until people realize that we are at war within our own borders, until people realize that and
right
stand up to stop it, this country is doomed if we don't realize that as a people.
And Cindy, your mic is back on live, and we'll turn it over to you. And then Arlen, if you'd like to end with some comments to what James or Cindy is going to chime in with, we'll bring it over to you. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I was just asking to make sure that I got turned back on, because I pressed the off button on my thing the last time. But, you know, I was just looking at something here that Arlen put in the chat, and it's a quote by Booker T. Washington. Arlen, if you don't mind, I'm going to read it out loud because I think it bears reading.
Please do.
And he says, there is a class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances, because they do not want to lose their jobs. Now, Booker T. Washington, I can't say that I agree with everything that Booker T. Washington did, because I've studied education of the black people in the South in his time period where he went to college. And what they were doing, and I've mentioned this before, so I'll try to be brief about it, but what they were doing back then was they were attacking any schools that taught blacks a traditional education. They wanted to shove blacks into the industrial education. Now, I don't know how Booker T. Washington got as educated as he did. I really don't, because he was taught the same things that everybody else taught. I think he just got under the wing of the president of that university and was able to learn more than most, because he got along with white people. Somehow or other, he got along with white people. He and Douglas Fredericks, they fought a lot, because they disagreed on how to handle getting rights and things for black people and getting proper education for black people. And sometimes I think that Booker T. Washington sold out in that department because he was a little bit brainwashed by the president of that college where he went. I'm drawing a blank what it was now, but anyway. My point. Okay. So I think that if Booker T. Washington said this statement that I just read today on a Bill O'Reilly show, he would be castigated. Oh.
Well, what's that?
Somebody needs to mute.
Not me.
What was that?
Well, anyway, if Booker T. Washington had said that comment that I just read on nationwide television on Bill O'Reilly's show, he would have been castigated by the black community, by the liberal left. Everybody would have pounced on him. The people like us on the right, we're the only ones that would have said, hey, thank you, finally the truth, because you have all these so-called black preachers out there going around making millions of dollars off of people because of the black problem. And you have them stirring up. I mean, look what they did in the Zimmerman case, just stirring up, trying to stir up trouble. And what's funny is they weren't able to do it, but they tried. They tried, and they're making big bucks by going around. That's how they get their income. People send them money and say, hey, go out and make more trouble, you know. So it's an excellent comment, and I thank you, Arlen, for putting that in there. It's a very important comment.
You're welcome. It's a fine kettle of fish when race of people, the two races of people, that including American Indians as well, who have been so abused throughout American history, continue to be abused by plantation paternalism of the mind, which is exactly what the collectivists do. Is they need their proletariat abused proletariat that'll rebel. And that it constantly give them support, you know. Rebel if you want to go Leninist, and constantly support if you want to go Trotskyite, with the permanent majority of the underclass giving you your Marxist position in office, so you can create your bureaucratic Marxism. It's if they would only understand these victims, how they're being victimized, especially with Planned Parenthood, which we bring out in those articles, especially the first one I put in. Planned Parenthood was started by a rabid racist, Margaret Sanger. She went around to the KKK to sell her ideas on for the Negro Project to reduce the numbers through abortion. And, she just despised anyone that would have a child born not into a wealthy lifestyle or an educated lifestyle. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Barack Obama is the chief, beyond any other president in our history, the chief most ravenous, bloodthirsty supporter of abortion on demand, infanticide outside the womb. And he's the Gosnell president. And how self-destructive must this be in the black community before more eyes open and see it for what it is. I'm certainly glad for so many people in the conservative ranks that are black that are standing up. But, you know, I don't know what's going on in those neighborhoods. Where are the voices that are in there? Let's talk about the church. Where are the pastors of the churches? That's where it needs to start. It needs to start within the church. And people need to turn.
Well,
it's almost like that.
I think they're afraid to say anything that's political in nature, that they're going to lose, you know, their status, or I guess their 503 or whatever that is, their status, if they talk about anything that can be considered political.
You know,
the black church is famous for disregarding that, but I think they're afraid they're going to lose members.
You mentioned the abortion clinics, and I'm guessing you know some of the numbers on that. Now, I read something, what is it, 70% of abortion clinics are in minority and primarily black neighborhoods. Is that correct?
Correct, right.
Now, the question I would have, and I
that
love
is true.
Statistics.
Yeah, that's
and
the figure that I've seen.
What brings this up is, I mean, I love statistics. I watch football for the numbers. what makes me wonder is currently, you know, according to the last census, the African American population in America is approximately 13%. And with over 54 million children killed by abortion on demand since 1970, one has to wonder, with the, you know, with the 70% of all abortion clinics in primarily African American communities across the United States, one has to wonder how many children never saw the light of day, and what would that percentage be? Would it be 20%? Would it be 25%? I mean, look at the damage, you know, that has occurred to, you know, to their own community, and consider the greater voice that they would have as a portion of society if that infant, you know, if that infanticide, was it, how do you pronounce that, Robert? Infanticide? It's now, that's not quite right. But anyway, you get what I'm, yeah, well, yeah, yeah. You know, if that hadn't occurred, and if they would consider the amount of damage that they are doing to their own communities with that, and it's primarily aimed at them, imagine the voice that they would have as a group in guiding America's policies and everything. And it's just, I don't know. Like I said, I love numbers. And when I think about that, you brought it up, and it made it pop into my head. Imagine the differences in American society had 70% of all abortion clinics not been put in black communities or black neighborhoods, and all of those children that were simply thrown in trash cans had never died. And it's mind-boggling to consider the difference in America that we would look at today.
Well, the black population, when they were under slavery, that there were actually more blacks than whites in certain states, and how their population has decreased on ratio to whites is very indicative of the onslaught and the battle. It's a war against them, I think. And here's the thing. You know, you mentioned earlier, Arlen, that that this plantation paternalism is being repropagated. I think it's been going on for quite a while.
Well, and it's been going on all of America. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And I think that the only difference now is that we, the middle class, are now going to be lumped into the same class or category with the rest of the serfs, the rest of the slaves. And see, the thing is, about the mid-century of the 1700s, the United States had more or less matured to become very hierarchical. They were very quickly moving towards the aristocracy, you know, the ladder that England had. And so it's really surprising that all of a sudden America turned so egalitarian and just really sought after liberty and independence and the republicanism that came about. And I think what happened was King saw the growing wealth of the Americans, especially the gentry, and he got jealous. And I think that's when he became, the king became more, he started to control more, try to control more. You know, the Americans had been pretty much independent and on their own way over there on the other side of the ocean. They got away with a lot of stuff that they wouldn't have got away with in England. And the king sort of, the king sort of looked the other way, and he didn't really pay a lot of attention to what was going on over there. The trade was great, money was coming in, you know, who cares, right? But somehow or other, he all of a sudden started to, I guess maybe it was just King George himself, just that particular king, decided to take control. And, I mean, they had kings in the past that had tried to do little things, and then they, you know, whipped them back, and they fought them back, and, you know, things changed, and they got their independence back, and then they came back again. And I see this, what's going on now, as the same sort of thing where the elite class has been getting a little upset that the middle class is growing so well. It was growing so well, and people were getting rich, and there was new money coming in, and people that they weren't in the same society, they weren't in the same class, and they didn't like it that more people were coming into their class. You know, they like to have their little private getaways where nobody goes there except the very elite, you know. So when a guy comes over there because he owns a company and he can afford a vacation somewhere in one of these elite spots, and he brings his two kids, and here's this normal, natural family, American family, just living off the land. You know, he's doing a great job. He's worked hard and made himself a business, and now he's in my place. And why is he sitting here next to me at my, you know, in this restaurant? You know, he doesn't belong here. You know, and I think that really does bother them. And I think that when we get too much money, the worst problem is that they can't control us when we have a lot of money. Money is power. And when we have money, they don't have power. So I think that it's about killing the middle class. It's about...
And this Obamacare is a good way to do it.
Exactly.
Well, and that's exactly what the deficit is for, too. Did you know that over 50% of our taxes go to paying nothing but the interest? Nothing but the interest on the national deficit. If you were to eliminate the national deficit, you could reduce taxes by over 50% across the board, and we would all have that much more money to spend and still get all the same garbage that we get from the government. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interject there, but...
No, that's good. But
I agree with what you said completely.
Yeah, well, you know, not every citizen can become a public servant, but the citizens can force the public servant to act like they want them to act, okay? And this is our moment. This is our defining moment. We've got to somehow force the Democrats to stay with our Constitution, to defend it, and to stop dumping on it and stop taking power that they don't have.
Well, and it has to be in their best interest in order to do that. I mean, and they won't do it unless you could show it's going to be in their best interest.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. That's the way we force them. We force the issue by making it their best interest to do what we ask them to do.
Well, and they're starting to see that. I just seen an article. Where is that? Here it is. It says Democratic aide, lack of Obamacare stakes could lead to, and hey, you know, maybe this is a good thing, lead to the demise of the Democratic Party. This is by Amy Parnas, or Parnas. It says President Obama's relationship with congressional Democrats, and we talked about Senate earlier, Democrats has worsened to an unprecedented low, Democratic aides say. They're letting it be known that House and Senate Democrats are increasingly frustrated, bitter, and angry with the White House over Obamacare's botched rollout, and that the president's May Koopa is in a news conference last week failed to soothe any ill will. Sources who attended a meeting of House Chiefs of Staff on Monday say that the room was seething with anger over the immense damage being done to the Democratic Party. The talk was of scrapping rollout events for the Affordable Care Act. Yay! Here's a quote that says, "Here we are supposed to be selling this to the people, and it's all screwed up," one chief of staff ranted. "This either gets fixed, or this could be the demise of the Democratic Party. It's probably the worst I've ever seen it," the aide said of the recent nude on Capitol Hill. "It's bad. It's really bad." Meanwhile, at a recent caucus meeting with Senate Democrats and White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonnell, one senator stood up and asked for a political point of contact at the White House. "There's been an increase in frustration because people feel like they are continuing to be blindsided," said one Democrat who attended the caucus meeting, adding that there's a check-the-box mentality at the White House in dealing with lawmakers. Democrats around Capitol Hill say there are a lot of people to blame for the debacle that has engulfed them, but increasing anger is directed at one person only, Obama. Is he even more unpopular than George W. Bush? "I think that's already happened," said one Democratic chief of staff. Senior administration officials say that they understand the frustration and anger on the opposite side of Pennsylvania Avenue, and they realize Democrats are the ones who continue to take a hit. But senior officials say the most important thing the White House can do right now is to get the implementation of the health care law right. The feeling in the West Wing corridors lately is that once the rollout is fixed, the public will see all the positives behind Obamacare. The policy will take care of the politics, one senior administrator official said, but not everyone agrees with that sentiment, particularly those Democrats in both chambers who are up for re-election, and we gave those names out earlier, folks, in 2014.
I'm sorry,
freaking
Robert,
out as they should be. I'm sorry?
You needed to stop and let us laugh at that one comment. That was just unbelievable.
What's that?
Hey, wait, reread that comment. I was stifling a sneeze when you said that.
The policy will take care of the politics?
No. If people just need to see the good things about Obamacare.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it says...
many of them.
I can think of one good thing. It's destroying the liberal movement.
Oh, well, there you go.
Here it is. It says, "The feeling in the West Wing corridors lately is that once the rollout is fixed, the public will see all the positives behind Obamacare. So, and then the last sentence is, "They're freaking out as they should be," said one senior Senate Democrat aide, adding that the rollout continues to be a lasting mess. And before I open to bring up the mic, you guys, I just want to add in that I recall hearing a politician the other day, I guess on one of the Sunday shows, saying that, you know, even Medicare and Social Security had their rough, the rough road when they first started. And he's like, and look at those programs now. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't think at this point in time you really don't want to be comparing Obamacare with Social Security, because look at the situation in the mess Social Security is in now, and how it's facing bankruptcy. And of course, Obamacare is going to probably face the same kind of problems that we're seeing with Social Security, but I think at a much accelerated rate than what we've seen about that. What do you think on that point, Arlen? Do you think that the Obamacare, if it even gets to the rollout, that it will it'll fail faster
the problem
than
here
Social Security is?
The problem here is the monetary system. Sure. Well, with the monetary system, they just keep on printing more money, virtual money, and all of the debt bubbles and solvency bubbles get pushed down the road until you've got this huge set of bubbles, each as big as the one that used to chase escapees in that TV series, The Prisoner, that are just hanging out there, getting bigger and bigger. And I think it's just going to reach a point where things will have to collapse. Here's my answer. I think just keep on building the bubble. And I think Daniel Hannan, last night, I think, on Hannity had it right when he pointed back to when Barack Obama said, when asked, do you believe in American exceptionalism? He says, well, sure, the same way as I believe in Greek exceptionalism. And Hannan brought out that, why did he say Greek exceptionalism? Because he understood what was going on in Greece, and does he not have that in mind? I think that's his job. His job and George Soros' job and Schumer and Reid in the Senate, their job, and Pelosi in the House, their job was to bring about the Greecification of America and to bring it down, to create a failed state. And that's why there's the rub, where I think it's going to blow up in their face. I think that it's going to happen in such a way that they're going to be shown as the perpetrators. Yeah. And that's going to be the problem. But what the Democrats can possibly come up with regarding any escape valve, any escape route out of the Obamacare debacle, I have no idea. I think that they're just going to be tempted more and more to see what they can do. I think the false flag event scenarios are well worth listening to and taking heed of. And I do suggest getting involved in your community, getting involved with Watchmen of America, if you're in military or law enforcement, getting involved with Oath Keepers, and doing what the Constitution, I try to bring this out in SOUTHCAM.org, the Constitution is not a, people say it's not a gift from government, it's rights, but it's not a gift from the founders either. It's an action plan that is incumbent upon Americans to fulfill. We have to fulfill the rights by our responsible behavior, whether it's the First Amendment, Second Amendment, the 4th and the 14th, standing up for our rights and putting our freedoms to work. And the only way that we're going to be able to do this is to take a hold of the power of the people, because if we don't, and the Democrats lose, what's going to happen is the top-down forces in control down through the RNC, which I say is the other side of the coin of the New World Order, they're going to put their man in, whether it's the next John McCain or the next Mitt Romney. His name might be Christie.
Oh, yeah.
They're just going to put that man in, and he's just going to do the slower walk version of Fabianist socialism for the sake of the New World Order. And that's real, ladies and gentlemen. I just saw this morning. It wasn't just that the Council on Foreign Relations is talking about the impediments to global governments. Okay, the founder of Dick Cheney, he was the director of the Council on Foreign Relations.
I do see, real quick, and I'll let you repeat that, I do see that there's only 5 minutes left of live time, but we will go into the extended version, which, of course, will be available on the archives as well as with the live version. But for those who would like to listen in to the extended version, call in at 347-945-7428. So if you'd like to listen to the extended version, area code 347-945-7428. And you get about 4 minutes to call in to listen to the extended version. But if not, of course, you are more than welcome to share and listen to the archive to hear the rest of the show. And I apologize again for that, Arlen. I just want to get that out to the other listeners.
No,
so if we
for doing
back
that.
Here, go ahead.
Actually,
sure.
I was afraid that I might have to finish. I actually, since we're leaving the live version, I do have to get up very early tomorrow to go have that surgery. So I'm going to call it a night. I'd like to thank you guys for having me again tonight.
God bless you.
Maybe the last show I do for a little bit. They say that I could actually lose my voice for quite some time, having to, I guess it's pretty traumatic to actually have to move your larynx out of the way to get to the vertebrae they're working on. So it could be entertaining. It could be interesting. I may come out speaking like Carol Channing.
No. Hey, we'll be praying for you tomorrow. What time, honey?
I go in at pre-op at 7:30, and the surgery itself will start about approximately 9:30.
Okay, we'll be praying then.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Y'all have a great night.
Definitely. Good night, and take care of yourself, and good luck. We'll talk with you soon or text.
All right.
Take care, Dave.
Okay, let me just finish my thought, and
go ahead.
Thank you. Take care. And get the ball out of my court. James P. Warburg, the son of Paul Warburg. Paul Warburg was the Rothschild implementer of the Federal Reserve. James had a very distinctive quote when he testified at a congressional investigation about what in the world the Council on Foreign Relations is doing. James was one of the original founders of it, and he said, quote unquote, we shall have world government whether or not we like it. The question is only whether world government will be achieved by consent or by conquest. Okay, so that's Dick Cheney's and George and Romney's people and McCain's people and Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, his people are those people, okay? And Reagan's cabinet was full of those people. It's true. And, we just need to understand that this is not just something that Alex Jones pitches so he can make money on his radio programs. It's what happens. It's why George Soros's minion was able to tell Glenn Beck, as he reported 3 years ago, well, don't worry about globalism. That ship's already left the dock. That's the fight, and it's not going to go well because it never goes well when there's an empire, and I think it's even deeper and darker and worse than that. But if you believe in America, you believe that we are a free and independent bunch of states that arose to put off that kind of empirical despotism. And even if it's centered in America, in the Gene Roddenberry Star Trek model, with the federation of planets, with a unified world. I don't care if it's out of San Francisco or Lower Manhattan. It's a I don't want that. I don't want that responsibility. I don't want that judgment coming down on America's head. And, I don't even want the dollar to be the currency for a global currency the way it is right now. We need to get out of that business. We need to get out of the business and call out the people that are doing it and do an Iceland and take back our national sovereignty and the control of our financial system and the control of our lives. that's why you have Republicans that are so balky in Congress, I think, very clearly, is the reason, that are pushed and shoved, and they still compromise with the Democrats because that's their job, to be the collectivist, to be the dialectic compromisers, to create the synthesis, and to just be the, you know, the pulled along end of the Overton window that just brings all that along. So that's the fight we're in.
They just kind of pretend to be the opposition party.
We just need to shout it from the housetops and expose it. Yeah, yeah, controlled opposition. And I don't put Rand Paul in that category. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we talked about that on a number of occasions where, you know, they just, excuse my French, bitch, complain, and moan, but really it's just a sideshow. It's a show to make it appear that they're actually opposing what the Democratic Party is doing, but that's not really the case. It's just all a show, and then, of course, they always cave and give in, and, of course, Boehner's, you know, one of the worst ones I've seen. To do that.
Right, and I do put Joe Wilson, who received one of those packets of Barack Obama's eligibility and document fraud information yesterday. I put him in the camp along with Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and Sarah Palin as the real good guys that are itching for ways to stand up to that. And there's a sovereignty caucus in the Congress with a couple of people whose names aren't on the tip of my tongue right now, but you know, so those people are in Congress, but they're just they just can't raise their heads too far, or else they'd be lopped off. So we have to differentiate and speak the truth. You know, Breitbart's name was mentioned. We got to do what he did, and even more than he did it. His last article was about that. His last article was saying, you know, there's not going to be a Republican presidential, a Republican president, unless it's one that labels Marxists and socialists for what they are, and that was his final word to America, and I think we just need to heed that.
You put a quote here in the chat, and if you want to go ahead and read that off, go ahead.
Oh, you want me to read it?
Sure. You put
okay.
it in there.
Well, all right. Well, I just
we want to hear
your voice. As long as it got wrote, quoted. This is a Thomas Jefferson quote. The sickly, weakly, timid man fears the people and is a Tory by nature. The healthy, strong, and bold cherishes them and is formed a Whig by nature. Arvin, is that you?
What am I doing?
I don't know. Listen,
are you hearing noises?
Yeah.
What is that? Is that you?
I think my microphone is supposed to be attenuated, but I think it must be picking every possible room noise it can. Sorry.
Oh, it does. Like okay. like typing. When you're typing, you hear click, 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 click.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Right. Well,
here's
the thing. The mantra has become, and they have spread this, the progressives, the CFR folks, they've spread this around because they use all these labels to shut us up, to make us embarrassed, to you know, marginalize our opinion. They give us this, well, why can't we work together? You know, Congress won't work together. That's the problem. We need compromise. How come those guys up there won't work together? Well, I'm sorry, but that is not what we need. What we need is some people to stand up to this agenda and you'd stop it dead in its tracks. And that doesn't mean you compromise. You cannot compromise to get that done. That's what we've been doing for the last 40 years is compromising. And it isn't working. It's just step by step by step, taking us down into the gutter. And the difference between what Arlen was talking about, the CFR folks are going to have global world, a global economy, and a global government. whether by force or by politics, or I forget what the word was, but either by peaceful means or by war, they were going to have it. That's just the problem. The Republicans have wanted to do it by peaceful means in small increments, to where you don't wake up the giant and get the giant upset. You know, when Jack woke up the giant, then he was in trouble. As long as he was sleeping, he was okay. Jack could get away with stealing anything of the giants that he wanted. Okay, but you wake up the giant, and you've got big problems. And then you have a fight on your hands. And so...
Absolutely. That's that wild animal that's being cornered.
Exactly. So we've got to wake the wild animal up. We've got to wake the sleeping giant up and get them working and get them against us now before it's gone too far.
Rosa Corey, and bless her heart, the liberal leftist lesbian in San Francisco is having some success doing that in her camps, you know, in waking people up against Agenda 21 and with her organization Democrats Against Agenda 21. I think that's the name of her website even. And so it can happen. You know, look at all the leftists as well as the conservatives against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And for various reasons, kind of differing reasons, but some of them are overlapping. It's interesting, though, that WikiLeaks only leaked out information on copyright issues with TPP. And I really wonder what they might be sitting on. I think they might be sitting on the Agenda 21 environmentalist side and not wanting to publish it, because I don't think that they're a bunch of good guys. I think they're a bunch of Marxists. But that's another story.
Sorry, who did you think was the bad guy?
WikiLeaks was the releaser.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I turned my microphone down, so maybe you can't hear me.
I can hear you.
They're definitely a bunch of communitarians from the top down, Assange and so on. They believe in George Soros's open society, which is really a pretext for gaining power in them and ideologically captivating people's hearts and minds. The true power brokers don't want an open society, but you know they're in that camp, and they think that the First Amendment and human rights can coexist with collectivism, which is just a ludicrous position. It's an absurdity. That quote that I read from James Warburg is actually in wikisource.org at the title James Warburg Before the Subcommittee on Revision of the United States Charter. It was made in February of 1950, which is right before the Rees Commission held with Norman Dodd and friends. So I think the Democrats are losing it. And it's going to be similar to Watergate, at least. And we don't know how they will react, do we?
Yeah. I just shared this the other day on my Facebook page about Snowden. I had not seen this. Back in July of this year, he had actually dealt with that the chemtrails issue. And how he
really
thought that the chemtrails were a part of the benevolent program aimed at countering global warming. He had leaked certain documents that said just that, but the news media won't pick them up because they are also considered highly dangerous classified information as far as government agents could be in trouble, or they could be endangered if these papers got out. But I think that's just hoo-ha. But basically, what he was saying was that yes, chemtrails are definitely happening. It's in It's in the government documents. And actually, the chemtrails program has been in, going on since the 1960s.
Now, we need to look at that. I just looked that up online, and a number of people are refuting it and saying it was a hoax. So I don't know. It looks needs further examination.
Well, this was put out by Internet Chronicle, and I don't know a lot about Internet Chronicle, but this I do know, that Al Gore's been on TV saying that chemtrails are real, and others have too. I'm talking about people on the left. They have come out and said that these are real.
Yeah, he certainly made space for it. Yeah.
Well, there's so many pictures of them nowadays.
Well, that's something that looks interesting.
Contrails are supposed to.
I suspect that there was something there. Sorry.
Well, contrails are supposed to dissipate fairly soon after coming out of the jet engine. You can see when you watch a jet go over, the contrail starts, you know, a little bit back from the plane, and after a few, it kind of expands a little bit, and then it whisks away, and it's gone. And the end of the contrail is gone before the airplane is gone, usually. Okay? When you look, I saw this for myself up here. I saw three trails that went by. We get a lot of airline traffic over here. Three trails were up in the sky, and they never dissipated. There was heavy winds, so they should have dissipated really quickly. You could see them moving across the sky like a cloud, but they never dissipated. And they got wider to a point, and then they just kind of stayed that way and then kept going across the sky. That is not a regular contrail. That is not the normal exhaust from an airplane. And there's so many people now joining in that argument that I have no problem believing that this article could be true. Now, I don't, like I said, I don't know anything about the Internet Chronicle, but I can tell you this. I won't go to Snopes to find out if it's true or not, because I think Snopes hides a lot
right.
of stuff. I don't think they can be trusted. So, you know, you just don't know. What you have to do is go look up in the sky yourself. You need to find out
right.
for yourself. You need to investigate it for yourself to find out. So, anyway.
Well, there is a group, a company called Evergreen, that has it on even on their website that that's the kind of thing that they do, that they fit planes for jets, big ones, for dispersing chemicals. And so the real answer is there, as far as I'm concerned, my real answer is I don't know, because something's going on, and there's some reason that all those birds died in so many places in the world
mm-hmm.
back in 2009 in big batches, and it wasn't natural. It just, you know, wasn't natural. Whether HARP had something to do with it, or chemtrails, or what. That was not a natural thing.
What I see as encouraging is that the environmentalists are now starting to wake up and get on the bandwagon with us. They're starting to see some different things. I mean, that Rosa Corey, she was a Democrat. She was, you know, environmentalist. Just like
right, yeah,
you know,
we had her on the show a while ago. Mm-hmm.
And she's now, you know, looking at stuff like that too. I mean, you can only see so much proof, and then you just have
that's
to.
Good.
I mean, but if you look on Wikipedia, the people who people who say their chemtrails are real and that they are bad stuff for us. Those are just conspiracy theorists, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah. and that, see, that's an opportunity, I think, for conservatives to agree with the left where we can and and differentiate ourselves as true, authentic Americans for populist leadership in our nation as sovereign citizens to say, well, we can't have Monsanto and company putting our foods full of genetically modified chemicals and not even warning us that that's going to happen. And we have to stand against these transnational corporations that are part of the complex, you know, from Rockefeller days onward and before. You know, BP and Standard Oil are classic examples, and so is Nestle, so is Monsanto, et cetera, of these companies that are have just gotten away with things left, right, mm-hmm. up and down and sideways. De Beers Diamonds is another one.
Right.
And we have to stand against those things.
And they don't, yeah, they don't have anyone they really answer to. I know I had a professor in college. She definitely leaned to the left, and she was always railing on, you know, Monsanto, and she called them Nestles, Nestle. It's just so funny she used to call them Nestles. And yeah, but she couldn't stand Nestles, as she calls it, and Monsanto, and you know, and transnational corporations. You could now when it comes to GMOs, I mean, I've got, you know, mixed thoughts on those. I mean, I do, you know, think it's kind of, I mean, because I love technology and, you know, just, you know, love advanced technology and genetics and things of that nature. Now, I don't agree with the GMOs that have the pesticides or herbicides, you know, linked in with the genes or the LOLs or whatever they're called. But I do, you know, I find it interesting how, you know, one good thing with a GMO is called, and you both may be familiar with this, it's called golden rice, in which they take the beta carotene from, actually, we think carrots, but no, actually from daffodils, which gives it the orange color. What they do is they splice the gene in a grain of rice, and they add that, I think it's called an LOL or something like that, but that part of the gene from the daffodil into the rice, in which gives the beta carotene or vitamin A to rice, which of course naturally does not have that. And one of the things they do with it is with a lot of the, your poorer nations that have rice as a staple, they give them this, what they call golden rice, because regular rice as a staple doesn't have the vitamin A. And so a lot of children actually start becoming blind from the lack of vitamin A. But since they're able to eat this this rice that has the beta carotene in it, it's actually saved a lot of the sight of a lot of these children. What are you guys saying on that?
Well, I have an opinion about that.
Well, to be quick, I think that's an area where.
Go ahead, Arlen.
I'm sorry. I was going to say that's for Adam.
Cindy and then Arlen, go ahead.
Oh, me? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say the problem with the GMO thing is not just that they're fooling around with the genes and changing things around, which I do think is wrong, because in the Bible, God says not to cross outside of kinds. Okay, and when you start putting crossing rice with carrots or carrots with meat, animal genes, I think that's absolutely wrong according to God's standards. However, you know, not everybody's going to look at that way. But here's the problem with it: they are contaminating the other seeds that people want to use. When the crops next door to you are GMO, and you're trying to grow a lettuce crop that isn't GMO, and you want to stick with heirloom seeds, they cross pollinate, and they your own seeds. Okay, then also because of this GMO. They are actually, a farmer cannot reseed anything.
Right, because
Monsanto, they
patent and copyright the patents, and they, right, you have to buy them.
And that
Which
has never been, right, and that hasn't been before since Monsanto. A farmer is supposed to be able to reseed from the seed that he bought previously.
Right. And I think he or she should.
Right. And talk about making it expensive to grow food. That's part of why food is so expensive. And that's why, you know, if you try to grow food in starving countries, in third world countries, and you have to keep paying for the seed, that's just outrageous. And also, they're working towards a monopoly, basically, is what they're doing. They've got all the seeds patented, and mm-hmm. You know, to make these super vegetables, and you can't. Nobody else can compete with them. How can you compete with a green pepper that's, you know, 5 inches across, as opposed to the ones I grow out here with my heirloom seeds that are 3 inches across, you know, or if I get a good one, it's 3.5 inches across. And they want to, they basically, if you look at all the seed companies, where are they getting their seeds from? It's almost everybody getting their seeds from Monsanto, and they're really working towards a monopoly, and in that capacity, they will fit into this global one world order that that the CFRs are trying to get. I should have let Arlen go first. That was
and they've already.
Go ahead, Arlen.
Well, no. It was important to hear. They already abused farmers. I think it was in India where they gave them seeds that would not reproduce, where the plants grown mm-hmm. from the seeds would not produce seeds from which they could plant other plants. Didn't tell
right.
them that, and they starved them out. You know, just like Stalin starved out the farmers in Russia.
Yep.
No, I disagree with that.
Let me do a test on you though.
Can propagate them yourself. Go ahead.
Let me do a test since we're not live right now. Can you hear me typing right now?
Not as much as we were able to.
Okay,
loud.
Good. Okay. I turned my mic off from auto because it's supposed to be attenuated. Well, that's good to know. Well, I think it's just a matter of getting together to fight exactly the enemy, and we need to get the cold warriors settled down to understand that the enemy is not Moscow or Beijing or both. The enemy is the enemy that put Vladimir Lenin in Moscow, and the enemy that funded Mao Zedong and sent Chiang Kai-shek rifles without bolts in them. That's the enemy. And that is that complex, and we need to demystify it. And you know, I've taken to calling them the FKA Illuminati because that's what we're learning more and more about. They got involved with the Parisian insanities, with the French Revolution, and they kind of retreated from that. And I'm in communication with a researcher who's found out that the thought leaders of the Illuminati went into, guess where? Frankfurt, Germany after that. And it became their headquarters, which was right at the core, of course, where Mayor Rothschild has sent his sons out from. And so that's why we have the Frankfurt School with their university sending out people from there to indoctrinate Americans, according to the, you know, taking advantage of the plans put in motion under the Wilson days that Norman Dodd exposed. So it's that enemy, and I try to present it like a three-legged stool, where the one leg are these thought leaders and conspirers, and I really do think some of them wear probably black robes and sacrifice children in orgiastic ceremonies. I wouldn't doubt it, and probably some of them don't. And the second stool is the financiers, and the third stool are just all the apparatchiks, whether it's the devoted, you know, Democrat and other collectivist politicians and or the media people, et cetera, et cetera. It's the true believers. And if you understand that that's the dynamic and the conspiracy both, and it's historical, then I think the cloud of fear, confusion, and ridicule can blow away. So we need to understand this historically. And I don't want to, you know, drag you on all along, and I have to really work on that sovereignty campaign fundraising page. Mm-hmm. And so I probably have to beg out. But I think, I guess the downside is we're always talking about the same thing when I come on, because I always bring these same things up. But the upside is there's so many aspects that we need to chase down, and I'll tie it together that we really, I think, need to present it just the way you all have, and appreciate the opportunity to join in.
Well, we appreciate you. We definitely appreciate you coming on. And, you know, I mean, you know, if someone misses one episode where we're talking about it, then they have another opportunity to hear it. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's good information for people to hear, and then they can, and you know this, Cindy, and you probably do, to Arlen's, that's one of the things that we really promote here on Bard's Logic is to people to go out and do their own research and look for things themselves, not always just listen to what they hear maybe on the mainstream media or even, you know, some of the, you know, so-called
Absolutely.
Conservative media, but things with what you're doing, Arlen, and check those things out and do their own research.
Yeah, we rely on you guys. So keep up.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what we want to do more and more.
Yeah. Well,
thank you very much. And by the way, send me an email and keep in touch. You can send me an email at Arlen Williams, all one word, A-R-L-E-N, at yahoo.com. And I want to keep in touch as well and let you know what I'm doing with the Sovereignty Campaign. Take care now. Have a good night.
That'd be great.
Facebook, too.
That'd be great. Well, thank you very much for coming on. We look forward to hearing from you again,
yes.
Arlen. You take care.
Okay, I'll try to make
good luck
noise.
With your fundraising.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you now.
Well, folks, definitely check out Gulag Bound. That's G-U-L-A-G Bound, B-A-B-O-U-N-D.com. Check that out. They've got some very interesting articles on the blog for people to check out, you know, videos, things of that nature. So do your own research. And also, of course, call the folks that we suggested tonight, the politicians, the Democrats that may be in trouble in 2014. Yeah, kind of put a fire on them to, you know, to vote our way with in regards to Obamacare. Of course, while I've got the mic here, suggest to go to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and check it out, and especially check out what I call the Give page, which has some wonderful organizations on there, charitable organizations that people can, you know, give to and help out. And we really appreciate that, and I'm sure the folks that you'd be helping out as well will appreciate it. So especially in this season of giving that's coming up and of Thanksgiving that's coming up just next week. And the next program will be next Wednesday, the night before Thanksgiving. It's also a day for me because that's my birthday. So, but we'll still be having a live show on 10 o'clock as we do every week. We'll working on a few things on what next week will be about. I believe we are going to be covering what the Obama administration is doing with Iran and how that's really upsetting our allies, especially our allies with Israel. So I believe that's what we'll be covering tomorrow, or not tomorrow, next Wednesday. Unless something pressing was to come up that we would cover that. So I do see it's about the bottom of the hour, Cindy, and I was hoping to hear from our very good friend Kelly this evening, but he may not have been, he was not able to come tonight. I know we had some family obligations that he had going on, and he may not have been able to make it, but it's still always good to have everyone else on. But I will be getting ready, I guess, to shut the extended version down a little earlier than we normally do. But before we do that, I'd go ahead and invite you to make any last comments about anything we discussed tonight before I proceed to close out the show. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, you know, all I got to say is the Democrats had better start listening to us. There needs to be some responsiveness to the people. And when their own Democrat constituents are starting to question their their decisions and their actions up there in Washington, well, it's just about time, you know. It's about time people started to wake up. And, you know, I'm hearing more and more black people say, yeah, maybe they are making too much out of this race stuff. They do throw it around a lot. And I'm hearing a lot of women that are working women are saying, hey, maybe there is something to this because now I've lost my insurance. And there's a lot of elderly people rethinking it that have always been staunch Democrats because now they're wondering why they're going to get told that they can't have that hip replacement because they're mm-hmm. 84 years old and they don't have enough time left in their life to make that worthwhile.
Right.
You know, so, and that there's going to be someone else deciding their health decisions rather than just them and their doctor. Okay, so the elderly are starting to rethink it. And then you just go right down the list and all the people who usually vote the Democrats in, they're all rethinking this, and that's bad for the Democrats. And I think if they're smart, they're going to repent. And if they're so entrenched in this CFR globalist agenda that there's just no way they're going to let go, then they're the ones that are going to cause violence in our country, not us. We're trying by peaceful means to get our freedoms back, to get our power back, to get our amendments protect our rights protected. We're trying to go back to our roots, and we're trying to do it peacefully. If they don't allow us to go back peacefully, well then, so be it.
And there we have it. Let's hope we can find a peaceful solution, and we don't have to go to the way that we've seen how things developed in Greece just a few number of years ago, what's happening over there. And so before I do shut down the show I'm going to see if I still have an article that I wanted to go over. It's a brief article, and I think this is a good illustration of Obamacare. And it says, the Obamacare poster girl now without insurance again. And a Washington woman hailed by President Barack Obama as an Affordable Care Act success story says her experience has turned into an Obamacare disaster. Single mother Jessica Sanford, age 48, of Federal Way, Washington, who got a shout-out from the president after her fan letter for the Affordable Care Act, has discovered she doesn't qualify for a tax credit after all and can't afford any health insurance, the Washington State Wire reported. It has completely turned around on me, Sanford said. I mean, completely. Sanford became an Obama celebrity October 21st when the president related her story. I recently received a letter from, and this is Obama, I guess, and him relating the story. I recently received a letter from a woman named Jessica Sanford in Washington State, and here's what she wrote. Obama said, the Washington State Wire reported, I am a single mom, no child support, self-employed, and I haven't had health insurance for 15 years because it's too expensive. My son has ADHD and requires regular doctor visits, and his meds alone cost $250 a month. I have had an ongoing tendonitis problem due to my line of work that I haven't had treated. I wonder what she does. No, but anyway, now finally, I wonder if she's a phone operator of sorts. No, I'm just throwing that out there on Bard's logic after dark.
Well,
it says, now finally, real quick, and then we'll comment, Cindy. It says, now finally, we get to have coverage because of the ACA for $169 a month. I was crying the other day when I signed up, so much stress lifted. The president then noted that is not untypical for a lot of folks like Jessica who have been struggling without health care insurance. That is what the Affordable Health Care Act is all about, but things turned sour. 4 days after Obama made his speech, the Washington State Health Exchange publicly revealed a grievous error. It had been submitting monthly income information to the federal data hub, but the federal computers were expecting an annual figure. The mistake involved 4,600 policies covering 8,000 people. Sanford's was one of them, the Washington State Wire reported. She ultimately learned her income was too high to qualify for any subsidies at all. The cutoff is $44,680 for a single adult, 400% of the federal poverty level. I was dumbfounded, she told the Washington State Wire. I thought this was a total mistake. They're going to correct this. This isn't true. How could I not qualify for a tax credit? I make under $5,000 a year. There's got to be something. So I got hold of my broker a couple of days later. He called me back and told me that, no, it was true. Sanford said she's back to no insurance and will be fined $95 under the Affordable Care Act. They have to own up to what is going on, she said. They have to fix it. They just can't go around and say this is working great. In my opinion, they ought to shut it down and just get all of it straightened out. Sanford said she doesn't want her store to be a political thing and doesn't want to be bashing the president or Obamacare. I'm a big Obama fan, she insisted, but to me there's a big problem with the way the state, this, of course now she's trying to blame the state, the way the state is handling it. It's like a big machine, you put your stuff in there, and once you do it, it is impossible to do anything. You can't get through to them on the phone. The website is really limited. So you're stuck on this big treadmill of bureaucracy. Duh, what did she expect? And, you know, it feels very out of control. Well, yeah, you know. Bethany Frey, a spokeswoman for Washington Health Plan Finder, told CNN on Monday night, I'm already looking into this with our client specialist team. I'll let you know what I hear. Go ahead, Cindy.
I see a huge boom time for lawyers going full force. So many people are going to be calling up their lawyer.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine?
It's like, you know how you have these advocates for getting what's the program if you're injured or something and you can't work anymore?
Workman's comp?
Not workman's comp, but the long-term
disability.
Disability, yeah. They've got all these lawyers out there trying to drum up customers saying, let me get your disability for you. If you've been turned down, I'll get it for you, and then they get part of the money. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so now we're going to have lawyer advocates to get your health care credit so that you can
And it's a government program. What did she expect to not have any bureaucracy involved with it? Are you kidding? It's ridiculous.
And she expected to get someone on the phone?
Yeah. It's hard to get anybody on the phone anymore. I mean, and with the government, I'm sure it's even worse.
There's a lot of things wrong with it. I mean, people are putting in all kinds of information, and it's not a secure website. What's the company that does the the update app, the what is the name of that? Well, there's McGaffrey is one of them, is one of the companies that cleans up viruses and stuff, you know?
Right, McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. Is it Norton,
maybe? Those people are saying it might be. Oh, it might have been McCaffrey that I heard it from. Anyway, those people are saying this is a hacker's dream, this website.
Oh, I bet.
They can get anything off of this website. Anybody's social security, address, phone, I mean, you name it.
It's on there. Some people are even paying by credit card. So
wow.
It's just amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, there's kind of two different ways you can go. You can go to two different sites to sign up. And I think what she did was she went to the site where you go when you're applying for the tax credit insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for your exemption insurance, not exemption because they don't exempt you from it, but basically you're signing up for insurance that the government's going to pay for, okay? And then you go to the other site if you're just shopping around for insurance. And by the way, you can't shop around for insurance until after you put in all that information. So you don't even know at the point where you're putting in your information, your Social Security and all that, you don't even know whether you can afford the program or not. And once they have your information, your very next tax bill, you will get a tax fine or a fee on there if you didn't actually sign up for the insurance. And now you may be able to prove that you got it somewhere else, but you're first going to get that fine, and then you'll have to argue your way out of that fine by proving that you've already bought your insurance somewhere else. I mean, it's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's going to get worse, and I think even if it does, you know, all the way go through, it's going to be a mess as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just going to be, it's just bad all the way around.
Well, that's obvious. And when that guy says, oh, just give it some time, everybody will find out all the great things there are about Obama. That's just comical.
And that is where we are at in America. Let's folks get involved so we can, you know, get this country back on track, and it's definitely going to need people to get involved. And one way you can get involved and at least get the information that you heard on the show tonight, folks, is to share the link here. There's many ways. You can email it to folks so they can download it later. You can also hear the archives on iTunes for free. So Bard's Logic Portal Talk is on iTunes. You can access it free there to listen to it that way. You can even download it and put on a CD and listen to it in your car for later. But then, you know, you share it with your friends and they share it with others, and then soon, you know, we just get the information out to just, you know, a great number of folks. And we, of course, here at Bard's Logic would appreciate that. And also, again, definitely check out the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And if you are a Facebook user, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk page. Like the page. And then there's also the Bard's Logic Political Talk group. Just go into your search engine and there on Facebook and just type in Bard's. And so we will see you next time. Next Wednesday at 10 p.m. And so thank you, everyone, whether you came in live to the show or you're listening to it on the archives. We will hope to see you again, and bring a friend. And so you take care, Cindy. I'm sure we will talk soon. And I will end tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com, AubreyAshburn.com. And no, folks, for those wondering, I am not sponsored by Miss Aubrey Ashburn. But however, if there's anyone out there who would like to sponsor the show, just either contact me through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website contact page, where you can put a message and your email address, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you about sponsoring the show. So enjoy the music tonight, and we will see you later. Good night, all, and take care.